A belief is a thought that you feel certainty about, right? I always say that beliefs is an idea that you feel certain about. And the word feel is the most important word in that sentence. The stories that we sell ourselves become the beliefs that we buy into. Your brain doesn't care if you're happy or confident. Your brain's job is to keep you alive.
Hi, and welcome to Lead Well, the podcast for you if you want to get better at leading yourself and leading others. This is Christine Schickinger, your host, looking into how you can achieve peak performance while keeping a peaceful mind.
Today, I have an amazing guest with me, and that is Owen Fitzpatrick. Hi, Owen.
Hi, Christine. Lovely to see you as always.
Thank you. So, I mean, it's hard to present you in a few words because you have been doing so much stuff. So let me start giving a few ideas of what you're involved in. You are a global business psychologist, as you call yourself. You're an outstanding executive coach, and you started at the age of 14, which is quite a while ago, but not that long, of course.
Just pretty recently, actually.
Yeah. Then you're a keynote speaker. You are part of the Global Speaker Association, if I'm correct.
The National Speakers Association, yeah.
National. Wow, that's fantastic. You have a newsletter, Inner Propaganda, every single week. And it's not just a newsletter. You could publish it as a book if you would like to. It's so much insight in there and so much knowledge. And then you also have a podcast, Changing Minds, which have been downloaded more than 300,000 times, which is also impressive. And you're all over social media. So when I open up my Facebook and Instagram, and if I would open up TikTok, you're all over the place. So there is always an Owen coming your way. And then your TED Talk, your TEDx Talk, also 1.5 million views, which is not only interesting because it's a great topic, mind control and how to win the war in your head, but also because you did the whole thing 10 minutes long in a rhyme. So that's you. I mean,
yeah. Well, look, as you can tell, all over the place, trying a million different things, but you know, a few of them work out well. So I suppose that's the goal.
Yeah. And I haven't even mentioned NLP because that was the past. You're now focusing more on belief and how to change beliefs. And you're currently working on a book. You just also told me, The Inner Propaganda.
That's the one, Inner Propaganda. It's a book I'll be out next year, but very, very excited about it. It's the culmination of, you know, 30 years or so of me being in this, more than 30 years of me being in this field, in this space. So I'm very excited about that book next year.
Mm. And I've not even finished because you also developed, I don't know how many online courses, I stopped counting them. And you're currently still running two mentorship programs. And that's how I have the great pleasure to work with you because we're meeting there once a month, which is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's great. We have a wonderful group, obviously, and it's great to have you as one of the top experts in our group. It's great to have the chance to mentor folks like yourself that are building, you know, your businesses and making such an impact like you're making to so many people and so many people's lives. So delighted to be doing all of that.
Wow. And the one thing that's always important to me, you are a human being. And I think that's great with all the success that you have.
I was going to say, in these days, you can't take that for granted, you know? Yeah. Like in these days, it might not be about me being a human being. Sometimes it could be about, I could be a bot or, you know, some AI generated version of me. So this is the real me. You'll pretty much know because I'll probably make a number of mistakes as we go through this, and that kind of will let you know, because AI doesn't make mistakes for the most part.
Or at least it doesn't admit it's making mistakes.
Correct. Yeah.
So in a tagline on your website, you say, it's not what you think, it's what you believe in. And the question I have is, what is the difference between thinking and believing? And how do I know whether I think or I believe?
So it's a great question to start off with, Christine. The way I kind of see it is, I think a lot of times we blame thinking for a lot of our problems. We say, the problem is I'm thinking negatively. And while thinking negatively can lead us to problematic situations. The fact of the matter is, it's not so much about just what you're thinking, because a thought can come into your head, but if you don't believe in that thought, the thought doesn't last, right? What lasts is a belief, because a belief is a thought that you feel certainty about, right? I always say that beliefs is an idea that you feel certain about, and the word feel is the most important word in that sentence, because the feeling translates a thought into a belief, and the belief is what drives an action. So if you're looking around to figure out what's, if you're dealing with a number of problems in your life, or you're struggling with a number of different issues, if you're a leader, business leader, and you're struggling with being effective at managing your team and being able to communicate the message in the most effective way, if you're struggling to be able to do some part of your job, more often than not, it comes down to the fact that you have certain beliefs that are holding you back. And we sabotage ourselves with these beliefs. We limit ourselves with these beliefs because our beliefs formulate the way in which we perceive reality. Right, whatever your beliefs are a series of thoughts that you feel certain about. Therefore, it's almost like you treat them the same as knowledge. And because we conflate truth, our truth beliefs and knowledge, and we kind of assume, oh, because I believe it, it must be true. Because it's true, it must be knowledge. Because of that mistake we make, inevitably, what that leads to is that we make decisions and we take actions based on the beliefs. And given the fact that beliefs are not true necessarily, we often make the wrong decisions. We often lead ourselves into causing problems in our own lives, causing problems in our own business, causing problems in our own teams, misperceiving what's going on around us to the point where we're sabotaging our own chances of success. And to me, that's an important distinction. So when I say it's not what you think, it's what you believe in that matters, that belief in something that gives power to that idea, right? We can make an idea much more powerful by cultivating belief in it. And this is not just about ideas, it's about companies. It's not just about companies, it's about teams. It's not just about teams, it's about yourself. When we say believe in yourself, you're giving life to the potential of you. You're maximizing the likelihood that you'll be at your very best. And that's really why I like to distinguish the difference between thinking and believing. But thinking is really important, but beliefs determine where the trajectory of our lives tend to go.
So is believing more like thinking again and again and again because I think it's true.
It could be, but it's more a case. So sometimes it could be repetition. Sometimes we're like thinking it over and over again there, but sometimes we might be trying to convince ourselves of something over and over again, and it's not necessarily belief. So if you say, oh, I'm going to succeed, I'm going to succeed, I'm going to succeed, I'm going to, doesn't matter how many times you say it, if you don't believe it, it's not going to stick. And so our goal is to be able to make it so that we recognize that a belief is something that has a sense of certainty, a sense of gravitas, sense of gravity to it. So it's a sense of conviction to that idea that makes it come alive. Because fundamentally, if I'm saying something over and over again, it's almost like I feel like I need to say it in order for me to maybe hopefully believe it, and then maybe it will make a difference. But if you truly believe something, then you have such a sense of confidence in that belief that that will guide you in that situation. So I'll give you an example. If you feel that, I don't think I can overcome this struggle. You're dealing with some sort of adversity, some sort of change, some sort of difficult situation in your life. And you think to yourself, I don't know if I can deal with this. But you try to repeat over and over again, I can deal with it, I can deal with it, I can deal with it, I can deal with it. That doesn't guarantee that you'll believe it. But if you truly believe I can deal with this, then it doesn't matter what happens to you, that belief will guide you, that belief will serve you, that belief will empower you to be able to tackle whatever it is. And to me, I also think of a belief as more like, it's less like a thought, it's more like a story that we buy into. So I have a phrase I like to use, which is the stories that we sell ourselves become the beliefs that we buy into. And what I mean by that is, it's not just about the story that you tell yourself. It's about the story that you sell to yourself because you convince yourself of a story. We have lots of stories that we think about ourselves. We go, oh, I would love if I could do this. That's a story you tell about what might be possible for you. Or you're making a decision, you go, okay, if I did A, then it would lead me to this result. That's a story you tell about the possibilities. But they're all just stories you tell yourself. The story that you sell yourself is the one that you buy into hook, line, and sinker. And if you buy into a story, that becomes what I call a belief story, right? It's a belief that fundamentally will determine how you're going to behave and perform from there on in. So I'm trying to get people to realize the distinction between, a thought that you might repeat and the whole nature of mantras, which, has its value and use, versus actually being able to learn how do we cultivate a belief? How do I get to the point that I very much believe in this idea? And a lot of people will try to just repeat it and it'll happen. Other people will say, just convince yourself logically. That doesn't work and nearly enough either. We need to find a different way. And that's what I help people to do.
And I think it's great as long as the belief is a helpful belief, because there are so many beliefs out there that are really not so helpful. So what, how to deal with them?
I think it's especially important the word you use there is helpful, because so often what somebody else who wouldn't obviously know, what you would know, Christine, would be they would say positive and negative beliefs. But the truth of the matter is that sometimes a negative, inverted commas, negative belief, like I'm not going to be able to do that by next Tuesday, well, that's a limiting belief. Well, yeah, but it also might be true or might be accurate. Therefore, it's not useful if I believe I can do it, if that causes me to burn out or it causes me to make mistakes or it causes me to fail miserably and invest a lot of time, energy, and money, or someone else's time, energy, and money on it. So it's not always about the belief that you have that's like positive, I can versus I can't. It's about what's useful or, as you put it, helpful. That's what we have to ask ourselves. And, how is this belief serving me, or how is this belief helping me? And I think so often we think that our brains are just picking beliefs that are designed to help us. And in many ways, our brain is trying to do that, but your brain is trying to build, pick beliefs that help you survive. That says nothing about you being successful, says nothing about you being happy, says nothing about you being confident. Your brain doesn't care if you're happy or confident. Your brain's job is to keep you alive. And to do that, it makes the decisions that it thinks it needs to. It cultivates and gets you to believe the things it thinks you need to believe in order for you to do that. And recognizing that is the first step, the first part of the process is, first of all, number one, it's the awareness. This is not reality. This is a belief. This is a story I'm selling to myself. And then number two, asking the question, is this helpful? Is this useful?
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, there is a lot of belief in yourself, I guess. And one thing that was so incredible last year, and it's a bit of a transition there, but I have to go there because, I mean, you ran the New York Marathon, but not as anyone else would run it, fully prepared, in good shape at the start, but you did that in a completely different situation. So why don't you share about that experience? Because I mean, when I saw you there, I'm like, now he's insane.
So just for context, and look, if you ask anybody ever, who's done the marathon or the New York Marathon, and you say, do you want to talk about it? The answer is always yes. In fact, most of the time when you don't want to talk about it, well, I want to talk about it because it's that way. But in a nutshell, I don't know where I got the idea from, but I'd done a marathon when I was like 20, 21 or 22 or something years ago, the Dublin Marathon. And, nearly 25 years later, I just got the inkling that I said, you know what, this year I want to try to go for the New York Marathon. I want to run it. And I had to start. I was running occasionally, 3 miles here, 3 miles there. But I decided I was going to train for it. So I started training for it. And I was actually doing quite well. I was pushing myself. It was such a slog because I don't particularly enjoy running at all. But it's good for me, if you get me. So I did that. And then I'd done some long runs. And then about a month and a half out, I got an injury, sciatica, it's called. And I had to go to the physio every few days, and I wasn't able to do any long runs. And so when I turned up to the starting line on November 3rd of last year, I hadn't really done any long runs in about 2 months leading up to the marathon, right? And you're supposed to taper, but you're supposed to taper for like 3 weeks. Taper means reduced from the longest you've run to the least. But I hadn't run a long run in 2 months. But I had a goal in my mind, and I had a sort of a target. And then because of the injury, I kind of raised the target. But when I was actually on the starting line, I was like, I'm going to go for the original target, even though I wasn't fit enough to do it. And sure enough, I went off. I was actually doing a great time. And then about 16 miles in, I got my back cramped up. And I thought to myself, here we go. And then I got referred pain shooting down my legs. And I had to stop, and then I ran again, and I stopped, and I kept forcing myself to run. So it was basically 10 miles of that. But I actually managed to make it pretty much what my initial target was, and that was with full training. Now, that being said, after the marathon, I spent the next week unable to walk properly. I was in bits. I came down with a sort of a cold or a flu. I destroyed my body to the point that I wasn't able to run for a few weeks. I was barely able to walk for a couple, but it was very meaningful. And again, these are the kinds of things. I raised money for charity as well, which was one, like, was really delighted to do. Rise Against Hunger, which is a wonderful charity that feeds starving families around the globe. But it was just so meaningful for me just to do that, to push myself, to test myself, especially as you get older. It was so much harder than it was when I did the one at 20. I mean, it was like driving an old beat up car that keeps falling apart versus having a Ferrari all those 25 years ago. So, but I was really delighted with my time, really delighted with the fact that I gave it 100%. And I think my mental game really helped because I've never been good physically. I'm quite clumsy. I've never been particularly great at a sport, except maybe, pool or snooker. But I've never been particularly great at anything physical. But I've got a good mental game and I don't give up. And my self-belief gets me through an awful lot that my lack of skill wouldn't. So I think from the marathon point of view, yeah, it was one of the most enjoyable. And it's great because I put my name on the shirt and, people are calling your name going, "Owen, come on, Owen, you got this." So you got like a million people as you're running along going, "Owen, you're the best. You can do this." Honestly, there's nothing better for your self-esteem than doing that. It was worth it just for that. But I was in decent enough shape for the marathon, and I was, I ran pretty much as I could of it, and it was a wonderful experience.
And there are more and more people running marathons and doing other distance races. What do you think is the reason for that?
I think there's a couple of things. I think first of all, it's cool, right? 20 years ago, what was cool was going out and, to bars and clubs and getting drunk and all that sort of stuff. And I think there's a lot less people getting drunk nowadays than there used to be, certainly of certain age groups, younger age group. I think alcohol is no longer as adored as it was. And I think that there's been a big movement to fitness and health and all that sort of stuff. A lot of the podcasting, the podcast, what I call the podcasting culture is out there. So a lot of the podcasters are all about, fitness and health and all that sort of stuff. But I also think it's something that we can test ourselves, we can challenge ourselves with, I think that the beauty of a marathon, or friends of mine do ultra marathons or triathlons or Ironman or whatever the case may be, the beauty of those is they provide us with an opportunity to single-mindedly focus on one thing. And while there's so many competing things in our world, to have that one thing really helps. Like for me, the one of the benefits that I got from the marathon training was I was focused 100% on something that wasn't work, because I could sometimes fall into the trap of being quite like tunnel focused. And I enjoy what I do. I'm very lucky that way, but I was like obsessed with it. And then when I did the marathon, I was kind of obsessed with that. So it was nice to have a different type of healthy obsession that gave me a goal that I wanted to achieve. And I think a lot of people are enticed by that. And then there's also the culture of itself. Like I do some runs now, or I do some races on a Sunday morning. I don't do, I'm, you know, not very good at it, but something about running with a group of, in New York at least, it's a couple of thousand people, and everyone's running and they're trying to push in, and it's a sort of a competitive sort of experience. It's fun, and definitely probably on the older side compared to most of the others that are there, but it's fun, it's enjoyable. So I think there's a few reasons for the interest in all of this, test yourself and succeed and achieve.
And maybe it can also be that the environment, I mean, the environment we're living in is not testing us as much, so we're looking for new
Yeah,
ways to.
things are. It's a very good point. We have it very easy, in a nutshell. And I genuinely believe that a lot of people think it should be easy. Like there's that phrase out there, and I fundamentally disagree with that. I think some things should be easy and some things should be hard. But I think there's an awful lot of value out of doing hard things. I think there's a lot of values in challenging yourself. I mean, not only from a neuroscience perspective, as you'll know, doing something difficult that's a stretch goal, let's say. You know, Jim Collins used to call it a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal, a goal that forces you to dig deep and to tap into it. That elevates levels of dopamine. It makes us more motivated. It drives us on more. So I think there's something to be said, as you pointed out, about challenging ourselves when we're not being challenged in the culture. And I'm not saying that some people aren't finding it very challenging. We're now in a situation where young people and, you know, millennials and certainly Generation Z will struggle to be able to afford their home. A lot of the younger generation have it in some ways tougher than previous generations, but in many ways it seems a lot easier because even mental work is so much easier with AI now. You know, instead of you doing the thinking, you let your ChatGPT do the thinking for you. It's kind of, yeah, it makes a lot of sense what you said.
Kind of weird. Now you ran the marathon in New York because you now are a citizen of the US as well, but you're originally from Ireland. And another fascinating fact about you is that you visited more than 100 countries and you were adding to that. And the question I have there is, how do you make sure that you fully experience the difference of a country? Because I mean, I remember when I was traveling the world with my little suitcase and corporate hat on, it was easy to just jump on a plane, go on a taxi in the hotel room, and then to the office. And it was really hard to experience the difference there. So how do you do that?
So, a couple of things. So, first of all, as you mentioned, I'm Irish and very proud to be from Ireland and whatnot. But before I moved to the States, so I moved to the States 5 years ago, but I would be flying, I'd be, you know, on between 90 and 100 flights, so 105 flights every single year. A lot of it would be work. So, I've delivered talks or keynotes or whatever in, I think, about 33 countries to date. And so when I was in those countries where I was working, first of all, you have the folks that would hire you and they'd show you around and give you a sense as to, you know, the thing. And then when I travel myself, I'd always have one rule, and that is, now I'm not sure I would do it the same way now, but I'd always like go where no one else is going. I would go and try to get myself lost. I would find myself into sometimes in all sorts of mischief, sometimes pretty hairy, dangerous situations, but I would always be trying to get the adventure. So I go to the road less traveled. I try to experience whatever wasn't just the tourist stuff, because I'm all about the people and the psychology and the way in which people think differently. So, for example, I went to Afghanistan. I spent about 2 or 3 hours interviewing one of the people that was there, trying to understand as much as I could about the way in which they think, about their experience, about what their perception of the world is, what their perception of life is, about religion, about all sorts of stuff. And pretty much anyone I would talk to, I go straight into the deep conversations. So we don't really stay at a shallow level. And because I'm not that interested in, let's say, the architecture or the, you know, what things look like, I try to get into the nitty-gritty of how do they feel and what's going on. And that allows me, look, when you ask the question, how do you know you're fully getting the culture? Depends what how you define fully getting the culture. I don't think anyone, I think if you live in Japan for 20 years, you won't fully get the culture, right? I don't think there's a way to fully, but I think that you can capture enough of experience of a place where you feel like you get it, you get the people, you get what makes it different, you get what makes it special. And that's what I look for wherever I go. So I'm less interested in the things that it's known for. Obviously, I'll do it. I've done the, you know, Great Wall of China, I've done the Taj Mahal, I've done the Angkor Wat or whatever, all of these beautiful, stunning, impressive places. But I'm really interested in how they think about their history, how they think about religion, how they think about themselves, how do they function as a family, how do they communicate with each other, how do they perceive work itself, what do they think about the challenges they face or the terrorism. And it's not always easy talking about that stuff because it's not very polite. But you know, I find ways to learn, and I do my homework before I go to the place as well, so I know what I try to minimize the faux pas that I'll make. And then when I'm there, once again, I try to, you know, I'm called to the places where few other people go, and I'm called to have the conversations that aren't, let's say, the typical ones. Because I'm not going there on inverted commas vacation. I see it all as an adventure where I'm learning. And now I'm traveling a lot less. I'm more based in America. But I think what I was doing with, let's say, traveling, I now do more with studying and reading. I mean, I always read a lot all the way through my life, but now I'm like obsessed in terms of reading, in terms of history from different perspectives and understanding the nuances between various different cultures. And it's all to me the same thing. It's trying to understand people and what makes people different, because fundamentally it comes down to what I call inner propaganda. Why do we believe what we believe? And so if you ask me, what do I think about the architecture in Morocco? I might not be able to tell you, but I'm in a much better place to be able to talk about why they believe what they believe and all that sort of stuff.
Wow. So it's really the people, the person that
And I'm an
you're interested
introvert
in.
as well, which makes it a bit weird. Like, I love just being alone, reading a book. It sounds so boring, but like, that's my favorite thing to do, is just to be hidden away from the world in that sense. But I do love the experience of meeting new people in different cultures. I love learning about, you know, a big part of the meeting other people that I don't like is talking about myself in that context. And it's probably also, I work for myself for so many years. I'm constantly, you know, having to talk about myself. And so when I travel, I just want to bask in the world of others. Because to me, it's like what fiction does, what a great story does. It transports you into a new place. And so for me, I'm still traveling. I'm just traveling in the form of stories, historical fiction stories, historical fact stories, right? But I'm still traveling in the world of stories, just like I was for a number of years during my earlier days.
And thank God you also share what you learn, which is great. And from my perspective, I can say that from everything that I've learned from you so far, I think my biggest learning, really, my aha moment was when I was talking about all the ideas I had, and you said, Christine, it's not about the ideas. Your ideas are worth nothing unless you bring them to life. So that was really mind-changing for me. And the podcast wouldn't be there without this statement from you. So, and yeah, you bring ideas to life. That's for sure. You're so incredibly productive, and you're producing more material than I think three other people in their lifetime. So what's your mission? What is driving you? Because you seem to be on a mission.
I think I'm obsessed with, let's say, if it's a mission, it is. When I was much younger, I was struggling with depression and I was suicidal for a while. And without going much into it, I wrote a suicide letter. And in the middle of that suicide letter, I started arguing with myself about whether or not I should live versus die. And from that experience, I then became sort of obsessed with trying to understand, well, why do I believe what I believe in? Like, how do we build the realities? How do we build a reality that could be objectively pretty good? As in, you know, I've wonderful parents. I was lucky enough, I didn't grow up like really, really poor. I grew up in what I think of as the greatest country in the world, Ireland. Like, there's all these great things, but yet I was in a reality that I was like, right, I want to kill myself. And when you recognize that that's a reality that you've built for yourself, to me, what I became fascinated with was, why do we believe that? Why do we build this reality for ourselves? How does that work? Because I suppose if I'm looking at a mission, it's to try to help more people understand why do they do that. And once we understand why we do it, we can then learn to be able to change it. Because there's a million self-help techniques out there, right? Just do this, just do that, just meditate in this way, just close your eyes and imagine this. And they're great techniques and they can help for sure. But fundamentally, what I'm interested in doing is trying to help people to see reality differently. And that's kind of why I'm creating as much as I can. And I also, you know, there's two things I love. I love learning and I love creating. And the creating piece, I constantly am challenging myself to try to get better at. So with the TEDx talk, that was me pushing myself and making it really difficult for myself so I could do it in a new, fresh way that hadn't been done before. And that's kind of what I'm also driven to do. And the other thing is that I think a lot of times people hold themselves back because they're perfectionists. And so you've got all these ideas, but the reason that, and maybe this is true for you, Christine, the reason you stopped yourself for so long is you were like, well, it has to be perfect. And the reality is that that's the biggest, most erroneous belief we can have. Because if it has to be perfect, then we're never going to do it. And if we're never going to do it, then we can't get better. And so a lot of times people talk about the growth mindset, and we all sort of walk around saying, I've got the growth mindset. This is the mindset by Professor Carol Dweck. And we think, because I believe I can improve, I've got the growth mindset. Well, if we turn around and we're perfectionistic and we're holding ourselves back from actually doing something in case it's not perfect, then two things happen. Number one, we're demonstrating we don't have the growth mindset, because the growth mindset is not just I can learn, but it is I can learn and I need to learn. And the way in which I learn will be through feedback and through risking it and making mistakes and pushing myself outside of the comfort zone, right? The initial research that Professor Dweck's stuff was built on was children that were able to persist in the face of struggling with a particular test. So children were given a test. Some of them were like, oh, this is hard, I'm going to give up. Others were, this is hard, this is great, and they enjoyed it. That's the growth mindset in a nutshell. So for me, I love the challenge. I love pushing myself to do that. And I think that's particularly important, is that we need to be able to find ways to grow and improve. And challenges is what makes us stronger and better. And also, for me, that's what gives my life meaning, is the ability to be able to push it out there and to recognize the only way I can get great is by doing, 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 doing. So the only way you can build a great podcast is by doing interview after interview after interview, and then learning how could I improve that and watching it back. And that's the tough stuff, but that's the stuff that makes it great. When you write a book, like I've written 9 books now. I'm not particularly happy with any of them. I think they're all good books. They're all, some of them are bestsellers, international bestsellers. They've done well enough. But I'm thinking about my next book and I'm going, this has to be the best book I've ever written. And that's, to me, the personification of this growth mindset that I think we all need to embrace. So what gets Rush? There's a line from the musical Hamilton where he says, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's, why are you writing like you're running out of time, right? And for me, what I'm trying to do is constantly get better and improve. So my mission is to improve and get better. So from a content point of view, I can help other people understand the stories that they're selling to themselves, because I'm constantly learning that myself. I'm recognizing the stories I'm selling to myself, and I think it can make a real difference. So that's kind of where it's coming. It's coming from an obsession. Can't even say it's a healthy place, but keeps me sane. Let's just say
Wow,
that.
that's great. I mean, I could go on and on and on with you because there's so much insight in you that has to come out and is coming out. That's why I don't feel bad because there are so many places where people can find stuff from you, as I said, social media and then also your podcast and your newsletter. And we've definitely put all the links in the show notes so that people can find you. And so for me, the only thing that is left to say is thank you, Owen, and thank you for who you are and all the things that you do. Thank you.
Very much appreciate it, Christine. And again, keep up the great work. If anyone is, by the way, interested, as you mentioned, thank you for putting the links in. It's owenfitzpatrick.com/newsletter is the best way to hear from me on a regular basis through that and the Changing Minds podcast, of course. But I think on my side, Christine, I think what you've done with this podcast is terrific. There's a lot of great guests that you've talked through, and you've a lot of wisdom yourself to share. So I think the difference that you're making, keep making. I'm so happy that you finally managed to get to take action on the podcast. It's going from strength to strength, and I'm excited to keep tuning in. So big fan of the stuff you do. Keep up, and thanks so much for taking the time, and thanks for inviting me on to the podcast. It's been a great pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you.
This was Lead Well. Now, what is the one thing that you're taking away from this episode? Please share in the comments below and do share the podcast with your friends and family, but only if you like it.